Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now. You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu. My co-host, Iris Van Kerkhove, is usually on the line with us, but she's currently in Toronto, eating lots of delicious food, I'm sure, and unable to join. But don't worry, we've got a great show for you today. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine and interview experts on the topic. We're super excited to have celebrity chef Jet Tila on the show with us today, all the way from LA. Jet was appointed as the inaugural culinary ambassador of Thai cuisine by the Royal Thai Consul General in LA and is the first chef to represent his country's culture and cuisine in the U.S. He's chef partner of three Thai restaurants, and he's made appearances on TV shows like Cutthroat Kitchen, Guy's Grocery Games, Iron Chef America, Chopped, The Best Thing I Ever Ate, Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations, and CNN's Parts Unknown. He's also the author of 101 Asian Dishes You Need to Cook Before You Die. Not dramatic at all.
Not at all, right.
And that just came out this week. So we're going to talk about Jet's background, his new cookbook, and about a philosophy he describes in his cookbook called Yum. Welcome to the show, Jet.
Thank you very much. It's one more off the bucket list.
Yes.
I got to tell you. And right when I'm off the air, I'm like going to be a member. I mean, I'm so like inspired. So
yes.
It's amazing what you guys
it's
do.
It's working.
So, it is working. Totally.
Tell us about yourself and basically how did you end up where you are now? And I know that's a really loaded question. Mm-hmm. So maybe start with where you grew up.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, it's a loaded, sorted answer. Real simple. So I was a kid born in L.A. I was born and raised in East L.A. And we still live on the east side of L.A. to today, right? Born in 1975. I guess we're not going that crazy. No, but...
like TMI.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'm an old dude. So I was born to the first... I think I say it as I was born to the first Thai food family, right? Mm. So my mom and dad were part of that first group of Thai people that came over to the States in 1966.
Got it.
And from that one group, I think, you know, everything Thai... you know, took hold and kind of proliferated from Los Angeles. We've got the largest Thai population outside of Thailand. We've got the only recognized Thai town in America. We've got, and I think we've got some of the best Thai food. You know, I'm gonna say it definitively.
Yeah,
LA
own it.
Has the best Thai food in America. Here come the hate. Here comes the hate mail. Here it comes.
And I heard that your family owned the Bangkok market, and that's yep. like the first Thai market to open in the U.S., along with, you know, the Royal Thai restaurant as
yeah.
well.
It's still there today from 1972 okay. until today, and my mom still works at the market. Like,
oh, amazing.
Every day. Like, so good to say hi to Mary Tila. Bangkok market was opened in 1972, and it was... And you know, like now it was a market. It is a market. But in the 70s, it was a trading post. It was a place for Thai people to connect with their own people because, mm-hmm. you know, it was an establishing community of immigrants all from the same country. They were really hip to know who was coming and going at that time. Right. Cool. Like and my dad would be like, Linda, bring a case of coconut milk, and Allie, bring a case of fish sauce. And this became like a little trading post, like a little piece of Thailand outside of Thailand.
I can imagine all the gossip.
The drama.
Yeah.
The gossip. Yeah.
So did you think that you were going to end up in food when you were younger, just coming from a food-based family? And did you even want to be in food?
Man, I tried for 22 years to resist and get the heck out of food and not be part of it. But, you know, I don't think a lot of people know, but my grandmother on my dad's side had like a little shop house restaurant in Thailand, in Bangkok. So they move from China to Thailand in like the 30s, mm-hmm. right? And in the 40s, they have like this little Hainanese cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I'm the third generation that cooks for a living. And so I was like, this is the last thing I want to do. So I rebelled so hard. I wanted to be a police officer. I was going to join the military. I was doing anything I could. And then I finally I stopped. I gave up, right?
Yeah.
I figured this is something I'm good at. I keep coming back to it. And you know, here I am today.
Yeah, and what did you grow up eating?
Oh, man. So I was primarily raised by my grandmother from my mother's side.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the Chinese grandmother.
And I need to get them to give up the goods on how a Hainanese woman grew up in Hong Kong. So she grew up in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up eating Cantonese cuisine.
Mm.
You know, going to dim sum every day,
yes.
right?
Buying the best groceries, kind of breakfast.
The best, only the phenomenal breakfast. And then she was the first person to take me under her wing. At 3 years old, she knew very quickly that Jet was not going to be like the good kids in the family.
Okay.
He had some attention issues and little hyperactivity issues. So she made me cook with her because it was calming and for me, and it worked out. And, you know, the irony is I married a woman who's like a special ed expert, like, you know, her background's in special ed. So mm-hmm. I think she diagnosed me 40 years too late. So
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. So I grew up eating Chinese food, mm-hmm. Cantonese food, and I grew up eating Thai food.
Mm-hmm. And so what are your food inspirations these days? I guess from maybe when you were younger, it sounded like your grandmother had such a big role,
mm-hmm.
As a food role model. But what about now, from like younger to now?
Yeah, I think what was really amazing about growing up in LA was I grew up in this pocket of East LA that was like sandwiched in between Chinatown, Little Tokyo. You know, there's no official recognized like Little El Salvador, but it was a big Salvadorian pocket and then between and a Mexican pocket. So my life cycle was eating all these amazing cuisines.
Mm-hmm.
So my influence, things that I love to eat are those, you know, Japanese food, Thai food, Chinese food, Central American, Salvadorian specifically food, and Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, again, that's our rotation. That's our familial rotation of what we eat every week to this day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's this natural, like little beautiful, you know, coincidence. I mean, I think that's what LA kids, like Roy Choi, myself, you know, like that's mm-hmm. why we're so influenced by all these other cultures.
Yeah, because I guess one of my questions I was going to ask is, I noticed your book is like Pan-Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why did you decide to cover like all of the different cuisines in one book as opposed to hitting them off like one by one?
Yeah, for a few reasons, actually. I think that, you know, nowadays, you know, the way we consume food is like that. In 1 week, you're going to eat pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to eat Thai food. You're going to eat Chinese food.
Fair.
Right? And
how'd you like figure out what I just ate?
See, I got you. I got uh-huh. you because we're stereotypical now of how people like to eat.
Uh-huh.
We have short attention spans. We want different things all the time. And that's what I wanted to do in this book. I really felt people don't want 100 recipes of the same cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wanted to write a book where, you know, you could cook through this book every week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Something you keep coming back to. That makes a lot of sense. I actually didn't even think about like the frequency of like you know, flipping through like different books and having to do that.
Yeah, we're so like crazy nowadays and we want all these different things all the time that I think this made sense to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of reflects the ADD thing too.
You have no idea. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, because it's radio, my wife's sitting here like nodding her
head. You're like pointing at her like every 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So we're talking about the concept of yum today.
Mm.
Can you define what that is and where it comes from?
For sure. So I think yum is the balance of five flavors, right? Yum is what Thai people consider the balance between hot, sour, salty, sweet, and savory,
mm-hmm.
right? Beyond that, I think it's a very easy way to explain to non-Asians how we approach cooking. Because, you know, we will take Asians in general, I believe, you know, believe in this concept of five flavors and how to balance them, right? Mm-hmm. And Chinese have a different way to approach the yum, ingredient-wise. Mm-hmm. Thai people, Japanese people, Korean people, but we really think about food in flavors, right? And different. I think the Japanese approach to food is highlighted an ingredient, a seasonality, and don't mess with it too much, but bring these flavors in to accentuate that flavor of whatever that ingredient is that's in season. Mm-hmm. I think more Thai people, you know, and some Chinese will say, well, look, I have these flavors to create the dish, and the ingredient really is just the substance, the noodle, the rice, the protein, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So
yeah. Could you give like some combinations or like dishes, name a few dishes that, you know, represent yum in some of these cuisines you talked about? So like Thai, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese.
Absolutely. So I'll start with Thai, right? You get yum by fish sauce is salt and savory,
mm-hmm.
right? Umami, mm-hmm. right? Lime juice is our primary sour, although we do use tamarind and vinegar. Lime juice is still the king, okay? Sugar would be either palm sugar or cane sugar. We don't use really a lot of beet sugar. Spice would be Thai chilies, okay? And then savory, again, is many things. It could be dried shrimp. It could be fish sauce. But that's the Thai yum.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into Chinese food. We have soy sauce. We have sweet soy sauce, which is very molasses,
mm-hmm.
more than it is soy sauce. We have a vinegar, right? A rice vinegar or white vinegar. We do use sugar quite a bit. And, you know, again, oyster sauce now, mm-hmm. I think is a very, it's not even now, but oyster sauce is such a fundamental ingredient in Chinese cooking that covers salt, savory, and a bit of sweet, right? But again, those are your sauces, and then you have aromatics behind them. I mean, I could go crazy.
Yeah.
Japanese, let's just keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of dashi, soy, and mirin. Dashi is, of course, as we know, katsubushi or fish stock, right, which is savory.
Mm-hmm.
Mirin is a wine, but it's sweet. And soy sauce, as we know, is salty, and it is also umami. And it has a sister that is miso.
Yeah.
So again, we all hit it.
Yeah.
We all hit the yum from very different ingredient directions.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I think like without spelling it out, we take it for granted. Like, why do things taste so good?
Yeah. Why does something taste Japanese and something tastes Thai? It's because of the ingredient you're using,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think if I can teach that basic concept, which isn't kind of so basic, it's a really nice way to explain, you know, because most people are like, dude, I make stir fry and it all tastes the same. Well, because you're using Chinese soy sauce for everything.
Yeah.
If you flipped
it. Logical.
Right. If you flip to maybe bringing in a little oyster sauce.
I got it.
Wow. It'll start to taste more Chinese. But now I'm cooking Japanese. Use Japanese soy sauce. So
yeah,
that's the yum. Mm-hmm. It is so important. But, you know, that is the getting on the road to cooking authentic food,
mm-hmm. in Asian cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
So as you kind of like listed off all of those different sauces, I kind of envision myself at the supermarket with like stacks and stacks of bottles and just getting like heavier and like not being able to bring anything home. So I do notice that in the cookbook, you also teach readers to make sauces themselves, and you really encourage that. So, like, what's the deal with that? And also, what's your take on sriracha?
Oh, man, yeah, that's such a loaded question. You totally are pointing me into that direction. I love it. Yes. Okay, I get it. Glass bottles are very heavy. They're 24 ounces usually for a big bottle of Asian sauce. But tackle one cuisine at a time.
Okay, yeah.
And play with that. Right? I would say Thai and Chinese first. Fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Okay? But in Sriracha, let's just be real. Sriracha is a coastal town in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Sriracha grows great chilies. And Sriracha created this sauce that was, you know, a little bit of acid, a lot of chili, really garlicky. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like Hatch chilies or champagne. You can't call it Sriracha if it's not from Sriracha. So okay. Look, I love David Tran's big quotes Sriracha. I like his chili sauce.
Yeah.
But I have issues when you try to call it Sriracha. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because it's not Sriracha, right? It is a chili sauce that you are calling, that you're naming that's not from the place it's coming from.
So is it easy to make? Is it like
it is easy to make? Okay. It's so easy to make. Real simply, take garlic, a little bit of sugar, salt, a little bit of vinegar, blend it with your favorite chilies and allow the fermentation process to take hold.
Okay.
Right? Just let it go for a few days. That lacto fermentation takes hold. It funks up and develops all these other flavors that weren't there before, and then and cap it and put it in the fridge, and you're good for a while. You can make Sriracha. It's not hard. It's in the book.
Nice. And this is where your like science intellect comes in too.
Yes.
Right? So you're sharing that.
I want people to like understand food and science. Like, you know, it's not a, you know, my culinary dad is Alton Brown. We know that. And, you know, we share this love for science of food. So make your own noodles. If you can't, if you're doing drunken noodles or hall fun, make your hall fun. You have everything in your pantry to do it already.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So since you started in the food industry, do you feel like you've heard the concept of yum, like being talked about more by chefs, food writers over the years?
I do. I just don't think they've called it yum. But yes, remember the book, Hot, Sour, Salty, Sweet, right? I think that was the beginning of people starting to understand how to approach Asian flavors in the kitchen. And so I hear it all the time. Asians have four flavors. They have three flavors. They have six flavors and three senses. Like, they're starting to break down. People are trying to break down, you know, how to differentiate flavors. And the key to good cooking is understanding ingredients that correspond to those flavors.
Yeah, so that there is a ton of science behind that.
There is.
That makes a lot of sense. Also, a cool thing I noticed about your cookbook is that you provide a nugget, like a cooking tip before each recipe. Super cool.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly that's from a lifetime of experience. And what are some of your favorites that you can share with our listeners? Some like hot tips to help them achieve maximum yum.
Oh, I like that. Ooh, hot tips to achieve maximum yum. I have to steal that. How to maximize your yum. So we've talked about ingredients already. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of practical chefy things that home cooks can do. So like down to like stir fries, like how to marinate your proteins.
Yeah.
Right? Because most people, if you take chicken breast or like a beef flank and you just slice it and try to put it in the pan, it's going to be tough. You're going to get achieve that Asian slippery softness.
Yeah.
Right? So, so anytime you're going to put a protein, a meat in a wok, slice it super thin into a tile and then marinate it with a little bit of cornstarch, baking soda, and oil, and it's going to create that beautiful, tender kind of slipperiness. There's tips everything. I mean, there's tips everywhere in everything in this book. So, you know, on the face value, you're like, oh, it's so cheesy. 101 dishes. It's so provocative. But really, this book is like, you know, the more you cook through it, the more you start to realize, oh man, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, I love that. And so, did you like divulge all your secrets? Did you hold any to the vest?
Cooking is like martial arts. It's like meditation. Okay, I think you have to practice.
Yeah, you can't, even if you just like read the secrets to Nirvana, you have to still.
It doesn't matter. You still have to meditate.
Okay.
Right. To reach the next level of understanding. So yes, I've written a lot in this book, but you can't really understand it until you know, it becomes tactile and you use your touch and your taste.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hi, I'm Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct on Heritage Radio Network, the show all about animals. Tune in on Mondays at 6 p.m. to hear all about animal education and animal welfare. Support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming by going to heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate. Didn't you see?
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West, and we're talking with Jet Tila about what he's up to and his philosophy on Yum. So let's talk about all of the different projects you have going on. So you have some projects with the Compass Group, the world's largest food service company. How did you develop those concepts?
Right after culinary school, one of my first jobs was working for a company called Bon Appetit Management. And we were doing a lot of the food service for the big tech companies in California. So we'd Google, Cisco, Yahoo. I cooked at all of those companies. And I created one of the first playbooks for that company and went into each tech company and trained the staff, like our teams.
That's awesome. I've eaten at the Google Cafe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I still have an imprint. I'm sure my recipes still exist somewhere in Mountain View to this day. I mean, from 15 years ago. So later on I went to Wynn Las Vegas and I, you know, opened, you know, my concept there. And I opened the Encore Tower. I opened the Encore Hotel. Mm-hmm. So I did all the Asian dining there, and my restaurant still exists there today. I'm not there anymore. Right? We had a good amicable partying, and you know, I wanted to go and marry this woman, have babies, and raise kids, and get out of the restaurant business for a while,
And not live in Vegas forever.
There you go. Nothing against Vegas.
But yeah, nothing against it. But
it was time to go home.
Yeah,
it was time to go home, and so I went back to Compass Group. Acquired Bon Appetit, which was awesome because now I had access to more concepts within Compass Group, and they're a phenomenal company to work with. They believe it or not, they cook 8 million meals a day.
Wow.
Just in America.
Okay.
I know it's a totally different, but again, that food is important, and to be able to affect so many diners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it blows my mind. So that's Compass Group partnership. And then we've got the three places in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
You got to plug Food Network, right? I love being on Food Network. I judge 6 different shows. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Cutthroat Kitchen, new episodes every Wednesday night. Sorry, I got to do it, right? I mean, you know. And, you know, we work with a big frozen food company called Schwan's as well. So I do ideation for their food service and as well. So
you kind of just like rattled off a dozen things. How how do you manage your time and kind of what is taking precedent right now in your life?
Yeah, you know, the projects that I mentioned are all have all equal importance. But and that's it. That's our. I'm at capacity, but I'm very happy with.
You sure you can't take on one more show?
Yeah, right.
Write one more book.
Yeah. Oh my God, we are writing another pitch for another book right now.
Okay.
We're a kids cooking book.
Aw, yes.
Yeah, kids like no other time in history are so into cooking. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
Like with all the kids shows and kids on social media,
it's such a like healthy activity too.
I agree.
And it's hands-on. It makes a lot of sense.
It's, healthy, for your body, but for your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
It brings kids back into the kitchen. Kids are cooking with their parents. Mm-hmm. They're connecting to food. So I think...
You can, lean back and just have them serve you breakfast.
How awesome. You're planting the seed for them to serve you.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's just so important for parents to get in the kitchen with their kids.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so...
Also, the hospitality mindset. It's, super respectful of others.
You hit it right on the head.
Yeah.
And, we got to get kids out of their devices and interacting. And, to your point, it makes them, again, the service mindset, the respect mindset. I think food is going to be the big equalizer, bringing kids back and out of the tech, I hope.
That's awesome. And so will you be doing a lot of testing with your kids? Can use them completely.
Free labor.
Yeah. One,
and also guinea pigs, too. So absolutely. If you follow me on social media, you see that we cook with our kids all the time. Yeah, it's a big ritual. In our house, this is the number one rule. If you like to eat it, you must learn how to cook it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how old are they right now?
4. Amaya is 4, our daughter, and Ren is 2.
Okay.
And both cooking already.
Oh, wow. That's very, tiger mom of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just a repeat of tiger mom of, yeah, you're right. I'm repeating the cycle.
Yeah.
My grandmother at 3 made me start cooking
next
to her. So I'm doing the same thing now.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, you just called me a tiger mom. I like
that. Maybe we should come up with a different term for the dad.
Yeah, dragon dad.
You're just painting yourself in a cooler picture or something.
I'm trying to anyway. I'm trying to.
And so I was wondering if you added an addendum to your cookbook, what would be the 102nd recipe you would put on there? Or a different section, or if you could.
That is an awesome question. Wow. I would add right now, because we're surrounded by phenomenal pizza. That's all I can go. I would do a Chinese roast duck pizza.
Ooh, that sounds so good.
Because I'm obsessed with pizza dough right now. This is something that we work on in my house all the time. So Chinese roast duck pizza sounds phenomenal to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Would you eat it?
I would definitely eat it. In fact, I think there's a ton of different localized versions of pizza in China. Most recently I was in Beijing and hanging out with my mom, and she was like, I had durian pizza and it was the best thing.
No, durian, really? Yeah. Stinky fruit durian.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we like durian in our family, but to hear that was on a pizza in Beijing, I was like, that's very new.
I think you and I just created the next Bushwick concept.
Oh,
durian pizza.
For sure. It's something that's edgy, a bit exclusive, because not everyone will like it.
Exactly. But who cares?
Exactly.
Right? That's awesome.
And so because you are doing so many things, I'm curious, when people talk about you or say your name in the industry, what would you like to be known for the most?
Oh, man, you cut right to the bone. Wow, you're making my brain work. That hurts a little bit.
After your pizza, too.
I know. I'm in, food coma right now. If someone talks about me, I just hope that, I just want to be known as a nice guy, not pretentious, not a jerk, that cares about people. And second, if I can teach someone something about my food, my culture, our food, our culture, the Asian culture, I think I've done my job. Those are the two things that I hope that I've accomplished. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to be nice. And I see all these young chefs in the industry and all the attitude. And I'm like, it's so much energy to be a jerk. It's so much easier, and it bears fruit to be nice. And again, I love to teach. If I could make a full living just teaching full time, I would. But if I've taught someone something about Asian cuisine, I've done my job.
That's awesome. And with your new cookbook, I think you'll definitely achieve that mission.
Very cool. Thank you.
Thank you. And so that's it for our show today.
Wow.
Where can listeners get a copy of your book?
Any major retailer. So we're all over, you know what I mean? Of course, the Amazons, the local bookstores. So support your local bookstore. We're everywhere. So we are, this is a large release book. So buy it where you're comfortable buying it and please enjoy it.
That's awesome. And for those who want to learn more about you and the work that you do, how should listeners stay connected?
You know, I like it. We can go to chefjet.com. You can go to Chef Jet Teela on Facebook. We're and Jet Teela on all the social platforms. But yeah, you know, hang out with us. Like, you know what I mean? Jump on, follow us, interact with us. You know, we want to know. We want the feedback. We appreciate it.
Yay. Building that community.
Yep.
Sounds good. So thank you so much for joining us on the show, Jet. Before I sign out, I wanted to quickly remind listeners about Heritage Radio Network's Summer Drive. Remember to head on over to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today and help keep food radio on the airwaves this summer. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.